Welcome to Encounter God's Truth from Whitcomb Ministries, where we are celebrating 5 years of God's faithfulness in presenting this Bible-upholding broadcast. I'm Wayne Shepherd, inviting you to listen to this very unique edition of our program as we're going to be bringing you a special treat over the next 2 weeks. Previously, we listened to Dr. John Whitcomb, our speaker on this broadcast, give the account of God's providence in his life and ministry. But now we're going to get a different perspective on that subject from Mrs. Norma Whitcomb. What a great way to commemorate the Lord's faithfulness to us through our first 5 years of broadcasting. Beginning today, you'll hear the Whitcomb's daughter-in-law, Kim Whitcomb, interviewing Norma and asking her to share her life story, including so many interesting experiences that the Lord has brought her through. This interview was conducted in June of 2016 at the 96th annual meeting of the Fundamental Baptist Fellowship International, which was held at the Colonial Hills Baptist Church in Indianapolis and centered on the teaching of biblical creationism. It's part of our ongoing series on the Ark Encounter. And we want to thank both the Fundamental Baptist Fellowship and Colonial Hills Baptist Church for allowing us to share this presentation here on Encounter God's Truth. So let's go ahead and listen as Mrs. Whitcomb tells us about God working in her life from her earliest days. Here's part one of a message called God's Brushstrokes on Canvas.
Well, ladies, today we're going to hear God's calling on mom's life. And we're going to do that just through a simple conversation and interview. It's a story that hasn't been told a whole lot over the years, but it's all about a woman who loves the Lord with all of her heart and is completely dedicated to Him and serving Him no matter what the circumstances might be. So, Mom, you are an artist, and because of that reason, you like to refer to life as a canvas. And God as the master artist who paints the perfect portrait on our canvas of life for each of us according to His will. Today we're going to share those details of your portrait with the ladies. And I know you have one heart's desire that you want them to just hear resounding through our conversation today. So could you share that theme, please?
Yes. I don't want you to leave this room thinking about Norma Whitcomb. I want you to think about how Jesus Christ, God the Father, has worked in this life to make me a vessel for His honor and for His glory. And He has a verse that I have used a lot in my life. It's the thought that all God can is totally sufficient for our lives, and it's by His grace that we live and move and have our being, and His sufficiency is always right there for our needs. That's what I want you to go home with. Don't think about how hard it is, but think about, focus on the Lord Jesus Christ. And in any situation, His grace is sufficient.
Well, let's begin with a little background of your childhood. You grew up in what you call a little hamlet.
Yes.
In upper state New York, called New Salem. Right along the Hudson River, you lived with your parents and your brother. You've told me that your mom was a great cook and seamstress. And tell us, what did your father do for a living?
He was one of these people who would be called a jack of all trades. He could do anything, and he did it very well. He had a good reputation, so that when anybody wanted anything done, they would call my father. And it wasn't always just mediocre things. He was a musician. He gave music lessons. He was a photographer. He was in the field, and he also did, what did we call that? He preached on fill-ins, taught Sunday school. So he was a very well-rounded man who loved the Lord. And my mother was a very well-rounded woman who loved the Lord. And so I was reared in a home where there was great example set before to me, so I love the Lord too.
So that was God. That was God painting bright brushstrokes on your canvas,
yes,
very early in life,
mm-hmm,
by allowing you to be reared in a loving and kind home. Do you have just one fond childhood memory that you can share with us today?
They were small memories because my mother was ill at my early age, died the day before my 16th birthday after a long illness in bed. But I had some sweet memories for before that. We would go nutting on my grandfather's farm, eat lunch by a little stream, go up the Catskill to the Catskill Mountains to see my parents' families and play with my cousins and things of that sort. But the greatest memory that I have is spending Sunday afternoons in our home, because we were a musical family, and we played in all the old-fashioned tent meetings, weeks, months, a month at a time in churches for these special evangelistic meetings they'd have. So on Sunday afternoon, we sat in the living room with our instruments, and for about 2 hours, we would just practice and play, and just the four of us, my father, as you mentioned, him, and had a wonderful time. That is one of my most beautiful family memories that I have.
What a wonderful way to worship all together.
Oh, we had a wonderful time. We played hymns,
yeah,
every time.
Let's talk about your mother for a moment. You were her caregiver,
yes,
from an early age.
Yes.
How did her illness affect your household?
Well, being bedridden for at least 2.5 years before she died, I became chief cook and bottle washer at the age of 13. My father bought and installed, because that was one of his expertise, an electric stove. And we were the first ones in the community to have one. And even at that age, I learned how to can peaches in the new electric stove in oven. So I have, what was your question, Kim?
How did your mom's illness affect the household?
Well, that was how it affected me. And that was mostly the way it was. I also, I was very industrious, because that was the example I had set before me. So while I was doing that, I was also a paper deliverer, every night taking papers around the little community on my bicycle. That affected me, but I had to work that into family experiences.
Well, it's amazing what the Lord will permit in our lives that we may not understand why at that time, but later on we'll use that to bear fruit later on. And
yes,
he certainly used that,
mm-hmm,
as you were a caregiver at other times. Okay, so you have graduated from high school now, and you have a dream of going to college.
Yes.
Before you could get there, though, you had to work for 4 years. So you were a chambermaid and cook for 2 years. And then you needed to earn more money, so you became a Rosie the Riveter.
That's right.
In support of the war effort. I would have liked to have seen you working in that factory. I can't quite picture that.
Well, I was riveting. I was soldering.
Okay.
Okay. Detonators.
So the war ends in 1945, and your employer gives you a decision. You need to make a decision.
That's right.
And tell us a little bit about what was going on.
It came to the end of the war, and they had to lay off a lot of riveters. And so I had the choice of either staying, I was told I could stay, or they would give me a release with 2 weeks' pay. I said, I'll take the 2 weeks' pay and... I said I would stay and planned on that. But I had wanted to go to college so badly, but you can see that there was no way I ever earned enough money for that. And my parents were not poor, but because of my mother's illness, a lot of the money had to go for her care. So, after I said that, the Lord, in His mercy and His grace, made it possible that in 1 week, my whole life changed, and I was able to go to college. It's an experience to have things like that happen in your life, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You've all had them. I'm not the only one. And you just want to tell everybody about God's goodness all over again. So I had to go down to this little factory. No, it wasn't little. It was huge. Factory and say, I'm going to go. I'm leaving. Oh, you're leaving. I thought you won't. Couldn't go do anything else. I just had to make a little testimony, signed out, and within 1 week I was in college. God's grace, His sufficiency. You know, I have a verse that's been my life verse, and it's like this: I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, Philippians 4:13. And it's been that way my whole life. It's not I doing these things. It's God just working, gives us the desire of our hearts. We have a desire that's almost impossible. But He works it out so unexpectedly, so quickly, that you just have to stand back with your heart full of praise and blinking your eyes.
So off to college you go at Houghton College in New York.
Yes.
And you were there for 4 years.
Yes.
And what was your course of study?
I did Christian education. I wanted at a very early age to be a missionary. So all my life there was something there I was preparing for, because I was going to be a missionary. So I took college courses that would prepare me for that. I could teach on the mission field, I hoped, and just be ready in that respect. And so that was it. And I had three minors, which prepared me also for good things on the mission field.
Mm-hmm. During those 4 years, the Lord called you home because your father had passed away.
That's right. I want to back up a moment. Now, what did I want to say? I had to work my way through college. I had to pay my whole way through college. That's what I did. Except for one, and this is God's, I'm saying this for God's glory again. He provides. Except for one $50 anonymous gift. But God helped me. He takes care of sparrows, and I said, "You'll take care of me, God." He provides daily bread, and He would provide for my education. And He did. I did it in 4 years. God was gracious. He gets all the glory.
So you went home for your father's funeral, and then went back to college again. You had some loss in your family at a pretty young age. Do you recall ever struggling, just really knowing that God was good, as you are now a young woman alone, seemingly, in the world?
No. I just knew God was good, and I wasn't struggling with it. I accepted it, and I believed it, and I lived on that premise.
Okay.
I'm no angel. I know that. It's all of God. Please, I'm not trying to put myself. I have to just say, God did it.
You just applied what you had. You loved the Lord. You were in His Word. You believed His Word. You applied His Word, and you lived it.
Yeah.
So that's what you've done for so many years. Okay. So your senior year at Houghton, a young man by the name of Robert Pritchett was in your missions club.
Yeah.
And he kind of caught your eye. Tell us how you were introduced, and eventually, how did he propose to you?
Well, there wasn't much of an introduction at all, because I saw him. We went to the same club, mission club. I saw him in the hallway, but I didn't go to college to get a husband. I went to college to get an education so I could go to the mission field. That was my whole purpose. But we did have an occasion where we went out two times, kind of very casual. I graduated, and we said goodbye. He was there, and we said goodbye at my graduation. And he was a war vet, so he was a year after me. And that was the end of it. Over. Done.
Well, how did you get reunited then?
Pardon?
How did you get reunited then?
Well, after I finished college, I began to realize I have no parents. I have no other brothers or sisters. Well, I had a brother, but I was getting lonely. Life is changing. In college, you're busy. Now I talk about the one rooms. I took a job at a little one-room schoolhouse with six children, and that wasn't much of a life, you know? When the day was over, what do you do? And so I started praying, Lord, I don't know a single person in the whole wide world whom I would even think of going out with. There's no young men in my church that I wanted. There were no people in this little hamlet that I would be interested in. Now, I thought that sounded like rather a futile prayer, but there are no futile prayers. And I left it there. There was this young man whom I had been out with twice. He was now in his senior year. He was getting what you call senior panic because he had dated quite a bit, but he hadn't found the right one for his life, to be his mate for life, and to go to a mission field with either. So he started praying, and the Lord brought my name to his attention. And so we started a correspondence, and you can imagine what happened. We got married.
You got married very quickly. He was invited to your home for Easter, which was April the 9th, 1950, and 2.5 months later you were married and off to serve the Lord side by side together. With the goal of focusing on mission.
Yeah, we went away because he went to seminary in Dallas.
Yes. So you honeymooned from New York to Texas.
To get him to
Dallas for seminary.
Yes.
Where you'd spend the next 4 years.
Yes.
And how did you help support your hubby, getting him through seminary?
Oh, well, at the end of 4 years, we both had degrees. He had his bachelor degree from seminary, and I had a degree also. It's called PhD degree. Put hubby through. I worked at the seminary for the first year in the business office to finish up some courses that I had to have in order to be a teacher in an elementary school, and then I taught for the 3 years.
Okay, so the senior year is when the Lord blessed you with little Dan.
Yes.
But having a baby didn't seem to slow you down. As you and Robert both were taking classes in linguistics and moving forward toward that goal of becoming missionaries.
Yes.
And so soon after graduation, the three of you were accepted to Wycliffe.
Yes.
And then eventually you were sent to jungle school. In New Mexico.
Yes, they called it boot camp.
Boot camp, yes.
And it really was.
Yes. So with baby Dan in tow, you rode on an airplane and then a burro and then another small little plane that dropped you off in your survival location. No shelter, no food, no running water, no air conditioning, no restroom. And it was up to you and Robert to build your hut to hunt for monkey for food, to cut vines to get water, and you slept in hammocks that were covered with mosquito nets.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever question whether being a missionary was really for you?
I never questioned it, but I had a few times when it was, you know, fearful and trying to put it together. Yes, but it worked out okay. I remember the first night we arrived to our destination where we were to sleep, or to stay, we had to put our jungle hammocks up to sleep in that night. The next day you start building your hut, and if it rained, you didn't get wet. Mosquitoes were terrible, but you were inside of this jungle hammock. My husband happened to tip his upside down, and I had to sleep that first night with my baby in my arms in the jungle hammock. Mm-hmm. And the very first night, it had rained. We had no wood to use to make a fire to cook our supper. That's one time I cried. You can't believe what I cried over. I had taken my beautiful pressure cooker with me. And I'm sitting on a log holding my baby, my husband trying to get a flame under this pressure cooker, finally got some smoke and smoked it all up, and I finally cried.
Okay, real quick, we all have to know, did you like monkey?
You know what? We went out one time to get monkey, and I thought I was going to have to eat it. And another group went out, and they came home with a little baby deer. So we didn't have to eat the monkey that we sometimes went out to get.
Oh, good. Okay.
There were other ways that God supplied.
All right, so after much prayer, you and Robert were led away from Jungle Missions, and you were then accepted by the China Inland Mission.
Yes.
So your focus changed a little bit there.
Yes.
Eventually you were
all
sent
of that, and we didn't use it.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need to work on survival, you'll know what to do. You can teach us. Okay, so eventually you were sent to England and then Singapore through the China Inland Mission. And all that time, you didn't know this, but they were observing you and evaluating you so that they could figure out where you would best fit into their missions. And so you were given your first assignment, and they told you you were going to the Philippines. Do you remember how you and Robert felt when you heard that?
Yes, we were very happy, because before Robert and I ever knew each other, he felt that he wanted to go to Japan as a missionary, and his second choice was the Philippines. And I wanted to go to South America, and my second choice was the Philippines. You see, when we left the States, we did not know what field we were going to be assigned to until they observed us and fit us into a niche.
Okay. So there was a little bit of a delay before you were sent to the Philippines.
Oh, yes.
And during that time, you became pregnant and expecting your second son.
Yes.
But it brought another opportunity for you as a couple to keep your head and your heart bowed before the Lord to know His will. Can you explain the situation?
Yes, because the China Inland Mission had a policy that you could only go to the field with one child. But they had extended the time we were to leave the States to go to the mission field. And guess what happened? I became pregnant. So here we are packing suitcases and barrels and things like that. And they didn't have to be very big barrels or suitcases, because we could only take 250 pounds. Now that's different than today, isn't it?
Well, we'll have to put a bookmark right there. And I'm sure you've already learned many things about Mrs. Whitcomb that you did not know before. But the story is just about to get a whole lot more interesting, so you want to come back next week and listen to the conclusion here on Encounter God's Truth. And you can find much more audio and also writings from Mrs. Whitcomb when you visit sermonaudio.com/Whitcomb. There you'll also see our library containing all 5 years' worth of programs from this broadcast. And you can get there easily from our homepage at whitcombministries.org. If you enjoyed today's message, you'll also want to keep up with Mrs. Whitcomb's writing ministry at windowforwomen.blogspot.com, where she shares new thoughts and blogs on a regular basis. Scripture counsels in Psalm 107, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for His steadfast love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom He has redeemed from trouble." That's what we're doing during this month of celebration here on Encounter God's Truth. So now for Dr. John and Mrs. Norma Whitcomb, I'm Wayne Shepherd. Please join us again next week, and may the Lord richly bless you.